Shalom, Havarim. Hello, friends. Is anybody else excited that fall has finally arrived? Is it just me? No, okay. The temperature is now bearable. It's been comfortable. I have been happy. I've been happy to wake up a little bit chilly in the morning. I'm glad to look outside and see the leaves on the trees, and there are many beautiful colors. And among all these things, there are a couple of things I just really lift up, things that I really love about fall. And especially this year, it's great because this year, my favorite baseball team is in first place and has wrapped up the top seed in the AL series. So I'm really excited about that. And of course, my favorite football team, the Ohio State Buckeyes, are bouncing back after an early season loss. And they are now doing a fine job beating such powerhouses as Rutgers by a score of 56-0, I believe it was. So all of these things are really exciting for me. I love sitting and watching not only the leaves change, but I love sitting and watching fall baseball. I love watching my fall football. One thing that I really don't like, though, is having to clean up in the fall. You know, those beautiful leaves that are in the trees, they don't stay there. They fall to the ground, and sometimes, actually, our neighbors have a really big walnut tree, and it drops those great big green balls in our yard as well. We have no trees in our backyard. Zero trees. And every year I spend hours cleaning up the leaves that our neighbors share with us. So yesterday I am sitting there watching my Ohio State Buckeyes defeat the Rutgers Knights, I think they are, whatever they are, the Rutgers losers, watching them play this football game. And I'm looking out my window and I'm seeing these green balls fall from the trees. I'm seeing all these leaves come down in my backyard. And I got so frustrated I finally decided to do something about it. So at halftime I got up from my seat and I went and shut the blinds. There was another half of football to play. No, I didn't even have time to watch football yesterday. We were so busy with the relief sale. It was wonderful to be there with so many of you. Raise your hand if you helped at the relief sale, attended the relief sale, or bought something at the relief sale. Excellent. If you bought a donut, you are helping out the people of the world. So you are making a difference. A wonderful event, and thank you for the people. I think Glenn said that there was a record number of sales that year, a record amount of sales this year. Just an all-around great event. Well, my friends, we are in our fourth installment of our sermon series on rituals, rites, and holy days in the church. And what we are doing is we're slowing down a little bit and looking at these holidays and saying, what do they even mean? Why do we do this and why do we do that and why don't we do this when these people used to do that? We want to slow down a bit because often we just go through the motions and we do them. Now, if you're visiting today, you may be looking around here and saying, what are all these things about at the front of the church? And I've left some reminders of the things that we've touched so far. We've looked at two different traditional Christian practices, so help us out here. A couple weeks ago, we looked at what? Baptism. We talked about baptism. Last week we talked about communion. The first Sunday of our sermon series we talked about what now? Passover. This was the one that got a few people. I think, what was this about? We talked about Passover. And today we're going to look at another traditional Jewish practice. We are obviously talking about Hanukkah. And this is my personal menorah. You too can buy a menorah from the Judaica Mall online. No kidding. This is where it's from. It's from the Judaica Mall online. And when you buy this particular menorah, you get three dreidels free too. So keep that in mind for later. And you're saying, what are all these things? You'll find out shortly. We'll get to them. So Hanukkah is a traditional Jewish holiday. And I'm 37 years old, and I realize I have never in my life heard a sermon on Hanukkah. Am I alone here? No, I mean, I've talked about Hanukkah, we've touched on Hanukkah, but have we ever spent a whole sermon discussing Hanukkah? No, not in my life. So what I want to do is I want to take a quick quiz to see what your biblical knowledge of Hanukkah is. Everybody ready? You have your pens and papers ready? No, you can just make this a verbal quiz. The first question, how many times is Hanukkah mentioned in the Old Testament? Call it out and let me know now. Oh, you are so smart. Which, just realizing, the same score that Rutgers put up against Ohio State. Okay, the second question for you. How many times is Hanukkah mentioned in the New Testament? This is a trick question. Once. One time Hanukkah is mentioned in the New Testament. We will talk about that. We'll read that scripture in its entirety, which is very brief. And we'll come to that shortly. But before we get started, I just want you to know that today's message is going to be one of those that's not real heavy on the Bible teaching. And there's a good reason for that. It's not in the Bible. Hanukkah happened during the intertestamental period. Everybody say intertestamental period. Which simply means the period between the Old Testament and the New Testament. It is not recorded in any of the Old Testament books because the Old Testament was written before the first observance of Hanukkah. Where we find this reference is in 1st and 2nd Maccabees from the Apocrypha and in the Jewish Talmud, which is kind of a commentary on the Torah. So we're going to look at these different sources and try to understand what this thing called Hanukkah is all about. So drawing from 1st and 2nd Maccabees, we find that in the year 167, the Greek Seleucids had invaded the city of Jerusalem. They had control over the entire Promised Land. And the Greeks are a very powerful nation. They're very powerful and large in number, and they're controlling this area. And the king of the Seleucids is Antiochus Epiphanes IV. If anybody's anticipating having another child, a really good biblical name for you, Antiochus Epiphanes IV. Of course, you have to have three other ones before that. Antiochus Epiphanes IV. Now, Antiochus believed that the Greek culture was the best. He thought that everybody should be speaking Greek. They should be eating Greek food. And let's be honest, who doesn't like a good gyro? Or is it a hero? I don't know. Greek food is the best. The culture is the best. The Greek religions are the best. So Antiochus starts pushing this practice known as Hellenization. And Hellas is simply the Greek word for Greek. Just like Deutsch is the German word for German, Hellas is the Greek word for Greek. So there's this Hellenization process, trying to make everybody become Greek. And one of the things that they do is they outlaw all other religions. Now here you are, a Jew in Jerusalem, and Judaism becomes outlawed. No longer are you allowed to keep the Sabbath. No longer are you allowed to practice circumcision. You are not allowed to even read the Torah. Torah scrolls are burned. And if you are caught practicing Judaism, it is punishable by death. So Antiochus Epiphanes is pushing this Greek culture upon the people. And he decides he's not just going to stop with the gyros and the heroes and whatever you might call them. He's going to go so far as to make it necessary for everybody to worship the Greek gods. And he starts erecting statues to the Greek gods all around the city of Jerusalem. Now remember, you're a Jewish Christian, or not a Jewish Christian, you are a Jewish person living in the 2nd century B.C. And this is one of the big ones in the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt have no engraven images. That's a no-no. And Antiochus Epiphanes goes so far as to bring in a pig into the Jewish temple, the holiest place in all of Judaism. And he slaughters this pig, offering it as a sacrifice to the Greek god Zeus. Now, if you know anything about Judaism, you know that pigs are considered unclean. Antiochus Epiphanes has gone too far. He has ticked off the wrong people. He has angered a group of people known as the Maccabees. Maccabees is simply a Hebrew word for hammer. So Judas Maccabeus, the leader of the Maccabees, is the original Hebrew hammer. This is what they call him. He is the Hebrew hammer. He raises up a group of rebels. And the rebels, this small group of rebels, go and they defeat the entire Seleucid army, chasing them out of the Promised Land. And now they are left with this defiled temple. So Judas Maccabeus, the Hebrew hammer, decides it's time to rededicate the temple. And what are they going to do? Where are they going to find this process? They go back to these two different places. Numbers chapter 7. Number 7 gives us the practices of Moses dedicating the portable tabernacle. Moses gets all of these instructions from God on how to do this, how to make it a holy place, what dimensions everything should be and how things should look. And then we go on to 2 Chronicles 7, the one that Lois read for us a few minutes ago. And it tells the story of how Solomon dedicates the permanent temple. And what do? They have prayers. They offer sacrifices. They give gifts to God. And they celebrate. Now, if you were listening really closely when Lois read that scripture, how long was the celebration? It started as 7 days. But they said, let's go ahead and do it another 7 days. As you know, there ain't no party like a Hebrew party because a Hebrew party don't stop. You're supposed to say what? Don't make me do it again. I will. Okay. They have this celebration. And in the middle of this Hebrew temple, they have this large lampstand. It stands 5'3" tall. And it has 7 different branches on it. Each branch has this cup. And it's spelled out in the book of Exodus. Exodus 25 says this big lampstand, it's called a menorah in Hebrew. The menorah is supposed to have 7 different branches. And each branch is supposed to have a cup at the end of it. And that cup holds, what do you think? Olive oil. And that olive oil is to burn. And they are to use not just any olive oil. They have to have the purest of olive oil. Extra virgin olive oil. And it has to be blessed. And the blessing of this olive oil takes a period of 8 days. So in this dedication process, Judas Maccabeus, he goes into the temple and everything is defiled. There, here's this beautiful candelabra, this beautiful menorah, and all he can find is one untampered with vessel of oil. And this one vessel of oil should burn for one night in the menorah. But this is the miracle of Hanukkah. Remember that it should take 8 days to rededicate the oil, to sanctify the oil. All they have is one vessel of oil. Should burn one night. And the miracle of Hanukkah is, how long does it burn? 8 crazy nights. Yes. The oil lasts for a full week and a day. The word Hanukkah simply means dedication. So the celebration of Hanukkah is the rededication of the temple after Antiochus Epiphanes had defiled it by slaughtering a pig and offering it as a sacrifice to Zeus in the temple. All right, so you've got the background. You know what's going on. And we find the reference to Hanukkah, the one reference in John chapter 10. Let's read it all together. Then came the festival of dedication at Jerusalem. That's it. It's over. That's all that mentioned Hanukkah in the entire Bible. That one reference right there. If you look at it in context, the whole context of it isn't even about Hanukkah. Let's add a couple more verses. So then came the festival of dedication in Jerusalem. It was winter, because this is really important stuff. Hanukkah always comes in winter. It was winter, and Jesus was in the temple courts, walking in Solomon's colonnade. The Jews who were there gathered around him, saying, "How long will you keep us in suspense? If you are the Messiah, tell us plainly." So the whole purpose of this passage is that here in Jerusalem, the Jews are under the occupation of the Romans. They have been since the year 63 BC. And there's this guy that's in town and he's talking and saying all these things. And people are thinking, hey, maybe he's the Messiah. And they're thinking, maybe, just maybe, he will do what Judas Maccabeus did 100-some-odd years ago. Almost 200 years before that. Here they are at the Festival of Dedication. Maybe, just maybe, God will do this again. That's it. That's all we have to go on. We have no reason to believe that Jesus celebrated Hanukkah. We don't know that he didn't, but it doesn't say that he did. And in fact, if you look through history, Hanukkah isn't even that big of a Jewish holiday. It's not until after World War II that people really seem to start celebrating Hanukkah. It grows in its prominence among Jewish people and more recognition from Christians as well. And you look at the Jewish holidays, here's a couple for you. Passover, that's probably the biggest Jewish holiday. Rosh Hashanah, that is the Jewish New Year. Yom Kippur, I think it was yesterday, wasn't it? Does anybody have a calendar with? No? Okay. Yom Kippur is the Day of Atonement. These are the three big ones. Somewhere on down the line, is Hanukkah. So why has it grown in prominence? Why has it grown in importance? I'm not sure. But I think it has something to do with a competition with Christianity and celebration at Christmas time. So what I want to do with the rest of our time here this morning is look at a couple practices that occur every Hanukkah in Jewish families. Because there's always different traditions, always different practices that each family will have. I mean, you probably have your own practices for Christmas or birthdays and things of that nature in your families. These three things are universally done in every Jewish family. Observant Jewish families, I should say. The first thing is that everybody lights the menorah. The second thing is that everybody spins the dreidel. And the third thing is everybody eats latkes. So we're going to start by looking at the menorah. Now, if you have access to the internet, if you have Google in your house, that's funny because Google's not in your house. It's out there somewhere in the cloud. If you have access to Google, you may Google the word menorah and you will find different kinds of pictures that maybe don't line up. Here is one picture of an artistic rendition of the original Hebrew menorah. Here is a more classic one compared to what we're used to seeing. What do you notice different about those two pictures of the menorah? Okay, Star of David, that's one thing that's different, yes. Anything else? I heard. How many arms are on this menorah? There are seven on this one. And how many are on this one? There are nine. Yeah, a little tricky there. All right, so the one on the left is a repicture of the original menorah from the temple. If you ever see a menorah that only has seven arms on it, that is supposed to be a representation of that menorah. But if you look at any Jewish family's home and you find their menorah, they will always have a nine-armed menorah. So this specific menorah is meant for the celebration of Hanukkah. This one is meant to be a representation of the one that is in, or that was in the temple. This was actually removed when Rome sacked Jerusalem. They took the menorah with them back to Rome. Because this thing was 5'3" tall and made of pure gold. Guess what? Cha-ching. Yeah, right. Is that like a 1980s reference there? Cha-ching. Who does that? Okay, so they took this one out. This is what they are left with. Of course, they have the eight main arms because of the eight nights of Hanukkah. The one extra arm holds the shamash. Everybody say shamash. Probably shamash, shamash, potato, potato. Something like that. The shamash. It is the Hebrew word for servant. So the shamash is always set aside. It's in a different location. And if you ever see a menorah, all those, the eight arms are all at the same level, and one is always set aside slightly different. That is the shamash. If you look at my menorah, eight nice level ones here, and one that is slightly higher. That's the one that you use to light all the other branches, the servant or the shamash. So the original menorah, it would have been filled with olive oil, so they had these cups that held the oil. Each one was holding enough oil to burn throughout the night. The current modern-day menorah would hold a candle that would burn for a minimum of 30 minutes. And that's, I guess, somewhat important to people. So the way it happens is on the first night of Hanukkah, which always falls on the 25th day of Kislev, a Jewish month, the people gather together in the house, and they have a menorah. And you can have the menorah at several different places in your home. The most common place is inside the front door, opposite of where the mezuzah would be on your door. The other place would be in the window. And next week I'll probably have this up in the window, and I'll explain why to you in just a few moments. So when the sun goes down, the shamash is placed in the center of the menorah. The shamash is then lit. And the families gather for prayer. Let's see if it stays lit. Yes, it does. So when they gather for prayer, everybody sings together and they sing in Hebrew. And I downloaded a version of this Hebrew prayer. We'll see if I let the whole thing go. It might take a little bit of time. And I'll put the words up here for you to follow along with it. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam.
be mitzvotam v'tzivanu v'hadlikeh shelchanu.
The Hanukkah, yeah. Next one, and you should be picking up on it now.
Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu
melech olam
she'atah nisim lavoteinu bayamin ahem bazman hazeh.
Talk over it. After the prayer is complete, and I should mention that everybody in the family can have their own menorah. It's not just like one thing, like you have one Christmas tree in your house. Each member of the family is allowed to have their own menorah. When the prayer is complete, on the first night, you take one candle, you place it in the furthest right spot on the menorah. You remove the shamash, and you light the candle. And you allow it to burn for 30 minutes. We're not going to wait for it to burn for 30 minutes. But these would burn down the entire way. Am I on the third verse, or is it repeating? Just thought I got it there, didn't I? Figure it out eventually. Okay. Second night of Hanukkah comes. And after these have all burnt down, you place the shamash in the center. Light the shamash. Then you place how many candles? Two candles. And they can be any color. It doesn't matter. And you always place them from right to left. Say your prayers and then light them the opposite way, from left to right. Does anybody know why? Because most people are right-handed, and if you do it the other way, you will burn yourself. That's my interpretation. You let it burn down for 30 minutes, and the Hanukkah celebration is over. So what I'm going to do is next week, I'm going to fill this thing with candles, and when I start my sermon, I'll put it in a window, start them burning. Let's see if I'm done in 30 minutes, okay? We'll let those burn for the rest of this time. So what are you going to do for 30 minutes? If you are a Jewish family, you're celebrating at Hanukkah, what are you going to do? We're going to come to that one next. If you saw my outline, the second one was play with dreidels. Come on now, who isn't excited to play with a dreidel? My kids are like, oh, I can do that. Yes, we've done this at home. I thought that would go a little flatter. We'll use this tabletop here. All right, so the dreidel is a four-sided top. The word dreidel is simply a Yiddish word that means to spin. And on the dreidel, you will see that they have four different Hebrew letters. Nun, Gimel, He, and Shin. Simply four different Hebrew letters. Now, they can come in different shapes, different sizes, as long as you can spin them, and they have four sides. Some of them have very fancy paint jobs. And I found out this week, did you know this? Elmo, I guess, is Jewish. So, yeah, I wondered, does Elmo have a brother Shlomo? Something like that. Elmo and Shlomo and Solomon, no. Okay, so any shape, any size, as long as you have four different sides, each side has these four Hebrew letters. And of course, those are letters. They represent something. They mean something. They stand for the Hebrew phrase Nes Gadol Hayah Sham, which means a great miracle happened there. You take your dreidel, and people gather around together around a table, and each person has a handful of something valuable, like M&Ms. pennies, or a common thing is those little coins that are chocolate and covered with gold foil. There's a Hebrew word for that, and I don't know what it is, but now you know. If you ever see coins on a picture of Hanukkah, that's what it's for. Everybody has one, and here's the rules. If you get a nun, first everybody puts one piece in, you spin it. If you get a nun, you get no pieces. If it lands on a gimel, you collect all of the pieces. If you get the letter hey, you get half the pieces. And if it lands on the shin, this is the fun one, everybody in the group must say, shin, shin, put one in, and you put another piece in the pot, and you roll again. I landed on a shin. What do we say? Shin, shin, put one in. It's a fun little game, and they get excited about this. And it's not meaningless. It's a reminder. A great miracle happened there. A reference to the dedication of the temple. But let's be honest. As Cadron said, we can only spin the dreidel for so long. There's something else which is the highlight of the night. And that is to you eat. I mean, this is a human experience. It's not just for Christians. Jewish people like to eat when they celebrate as well. And the very common thing for them to eat is the latke. The latke is a fried potato pancake. Come on now. Fried potato pancakes. You know, I mean, I go to the state fair on occasion, and you find things like fried Twinkies and fried Oreos. And, you know, eating fried food is a part of the Jewish tradition. And if there's not a good reason to convert, that right there is. You know, come on now. They fry up these potato pancakes, and they sit around and eat them. And it's not just pancakes, not just potato pancakes. They mix in things like fruits and vegetables. They're often made with sweet potatoes and other things as well. Now, if you think about this tradition of eating potato pancakes, it might surprise you to find out that this tradition goes back all of about 150 years. Talk to any Jewish person today, they're excited about their latkes, but it's only about 150-year-old tradition. In large part because, well, if you think about the Hebrew hammer, you think about Judas Maccabeus. Judas Maccabeus did not eat a potato pancake because they didn't have potatoes back then. This is no small deal. It's no small potatoes. They didn't grow potatoes in Israel. They still don't grow potatoes in Israel. The climate isn't right for it. Potatoes have only been cultivated in the world for the last 500 years or so, and they were only common in the Western world about the last 200 years. So why do they make these out of potatoes? How many of you are going to have cranberry sauce for Thanksgiving? Yeah. How many people grew up with the tradition of eating pork and sauerkraut at New Year's Eve? Okay. How many of you like to eat ham on Christmas? Come on, folks. Nothing says happy birthday to the King of the Jews like a spiral-cut ham. What? What? You've never thought of that. The point of the latke has nothing to do with the potato. It has everything to do with that it's fried. Fried in what? Olive oil. Oh. So Jewish people in the United States, they get really excited about the potato pancakes, the latkes, but that is a tradition that they learned from their ancestors, just like you maybe eat pork and sauerkraut or cranberry or ham because that's what your ancestors did. They used potatoes because potatoes were common in Germany, and most Jewish people in the United States came from Germany or that region of the world. So this is a common fried food that they eat. You'll see these fried donuts and fried breads also at Hanukkah meals. And then if you're going to ask me which one I prefer, I'm going with the jelly donut every time. And yes, the fried Twinkie counts. You guys are grimacing. Okay. The point isn't what is fried. The point is that it's fried in oil. So every Jewish family will observe these three different things on Hanukkah. They will light the menorah. They will spin the dreidel. And they will eat their latkes. And I'll take my dreidels with some instructions out to the fellowship hall. If you want to play with the dreidel after the church service, you're very welcome to do that. Now, why do they do that? Is it because it's fun to spin little tops? No. Is it fun because it's fun to play with fire? A little bit. Do they eat the latkes because they're tasty? Maybe. No. They do it all because a great miracle happened there. Now, should we as Christians be observing Hanukkah? You'll get debates either way. And I can be influenced one way or another. I get the arguments on both sides. But if we remember what happened there, this was a dedication to the temple. And the Jewish people in the United States today, they're not just celebrating the dedication of the temple. They're celebrating a rededication of this temple. So whether or not we spin the dreidel or light the menorah or eat fried foods, I think that we are all called every year, perhaps every day, to rededicate our lives to following Jesus Christ. Let's pray. Loving God, as we seek to learn more and more about these practices, these rituals, these routines and holy days, we just ask you, Lord, that you help us to rededicate our lives, rededicate ourselves, so that we can become closer and closer to you. Help us, God, for when we fall and fail and slide away, we know that we can do better. Help us to draw closer to you, to draw closer to one another. In Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen.